everybody had a perfect family, didn't they? You know, dad worked, supported the family. Mom stayed home, took care of the kids, did all these PTA things, all the volunteer things, you know, made cookies, which were great, and cooked this huge family meal every night. And we had people we could look up. We had Walt and June Cleaver, right? We had Ozzie and Harriet. We could look up to them, right? And while we wished that there were such thing as a perfect family, wished it was true, we knew, many of us behind closed doors, that's not exactly what it was. And I was thinking about Tori, somebody that I knew a long time ago. She said to me, see, I wish I knew what it meant to even have a warm, loving family. You know, people who loved you and that are there for you, no matter what the circumstances is. You know, my family is so broken, I don't even care if I live anymore. And then there was another one. He was Jake. He grew up in this abusive family. His mother was an alcoholic, you know, and he said, you know, for so long, I believe that I caused her behavior because that's what she told me. She says, my dad left. He couldn't take it anymore. 5 years later, he finally gets in touch with me and he gets upset with me because I hadn't called him. He says, I was just a kid. How was I supposed to know to get in touch with them, you know? And besides that, he already had a brand new son and daughter that he was spending all his time with and just kind of threw me away. Finally, there was somebody, Amelia, and she was one of those people that was wise before, beyond their ages. You probably know them. She said this to me. She says, everyone wants to have that perfect family. You know, the one where everyone loves each other. We're happy all the time. The family members, all of us get along, right? She says, I finally decided that that's never really going to be true because you can't change other people to be how you want them to be. You have to accept them for who they are, their faults, their shortcomings, their dysfunction. It's easy to see theirs and our own. I've noticed that. Jim Mullen, who wrote It Takes a Village to Raise an Idiot, he said, you know, that he has long held the theory that the reason the pilgrims started having Thanksgiving here is so they wouldn't have to go home for the holiday with their relatives. Maybe that's why they have turkey. Anyway, have you noticed that dysfunction in a family tends to be generational, you know? Exodus 34 reminds us about the sins of the father and that those sins of the father will be impacted on the children and the children's children down to the fourth generation. We've seen it go generation and generation after that. In our case of Joseph, this is what's really true. Because if we look back, Cain and Abel, who were brothers, right, they had a mom and dad who favored one over the other, and what resulted in that? Murder, right, for them. And Joseph's great-grandfather and his great-grandmother were Abraham and Sarah, right? They couldn't have a baby, so Sarah says, okay, just go have one with Hagar, right? He has one with Hagar. And then Sarah gets pregnant, has Isaac, and what happens? She has a preference for Isaac. And Ishmael and Hagar get sent out to the desert to die, right? And so that wasn't the end of it then, you know. Joseph's own father, Jacob, well, his own grandfather, let me take it back. Jacob's father, there were two of them, there were Jacob and Esau, right? And Rebecca's favorite was Jacob. So what did Rebecca help Jacob do? Helped him steal away Esau's birthright, right? And then Jacob, he falls in love with Rachel, and he works 7 long years just to marry her. And guess what happens? In case you haven't read that section. On his honeymoon night, They actually married unto Leah, her older sister, right? So then he has to work 7 more years so he can marry Rachel, who he really loved. But now he's got 2 families and 2 wives, and that would be enough for anybody, I think, Yeah, more than enough, right? But that brings us to today's scripture, you see, because Joseph and Benjamin were born to Rachel. Rachel dies when Benjamin's born, right? And from Leah, there were 12 brothers. So they actually are stepbrothers of Joseph, right? And sometimes we know stepbrothers and don't always get along, right? And there was one daughter that was named Leah. A few chapters before, we found out all about these stepbrothers' dispositions. See, because what happened was Leah got raped by somebody. And Jacob, I got to tell you, is a wimp. He never does anything or really says anything. So he feared the town officials, he didn't say anything about Leah. But the brothers didn't like him. Two of them in particular went, and Benjamin and myself killed every male that was in the town. All right? And then all the brothers, except Joseph and Benjamin, went into town and looted the whole place, took all the wealth, took everything they had there, took all the women, took all the children, and took them as their own. I think that this family needed Dr. Phil. But you have to wonder, what was Jacob thinking when he sent Joseph out to his brothers? Do you think he might have thought about that he was sending to the people that could murder people? I don't know. So as we're studying Joseph today, and as we think about this whole story in Genesis, which I hope you're reading, because it is a really very good story, you know, and we talk about what it's like to live in a dysfunctional family, and how, if you live in one, and my guess is a good percent of you either are living in one, or you grew up in one, or it could be both of them, it can make your Christian walk really, really difficult. But I want to tell you today, it's not impossible. Because if we look at Joseph was faithful to God in spite of living in this terrible, messed up family. And God went on to use him powerfully, which we'll be talking about as we go in the future. But his problem started with Jacob and Jacob's preference for him as his one of his children, right? And the other thing that it started with was what? What did Joseph give him? I know some of you have been to the new theater and saw it. What was it? It was this fabulous coat, right? He gives him this fabulous coat. All the other children got their clothes off at the clearance rack at Goodwill. Short robes, short sleeves, right? Working men's clothes is what they got, right? But Dad goes to Dillard's and buys him this fabulous robe. Now, it had long sleeve. It was richly adorned. You know, it was beautiful. It was kind of what a king might wear. Now, you and I, in these days, we might consider it to be like, you ever seen a CEO of a big major company that has this really expensive, tailored, sometimes Italian suits, right? Kind of like they wore in The Godfather? No. That's what it looked like, you know? And it was like Jacob's going to his sons, who have been doing all this work for him, although I think they goofed off a lot, and saying, this is Joseph. He's my favorite son, and he's exempt from doing all this work. He's just going to kind of manage you, you know. And even though he's a lot younger than you, you have to listen to him. Well, how well would that have gone over with you? I can think about this one job that I worked for, this family business, and I really worked my butt off. Not truly true, because I know what it looks like. But anyway, I worked really hard, and then what happens when their son got out of college? What do you think happened? They brought him in over me, and he didn't know anything. And he expected me to train him to do everything, right? So I know how they feel. So when Joseph gets to his brother, what's the natural thing they're going to do? They're going to take his coat, right? Because the coat stands for everything they hate. The fact he's favored, the fact he's supposed to be lording over him, they throw him into a pit, and they sell him into slavery, right, which is to the Ishmaelites, which is really ironic. You have to kind of catch this when you think about the Ishmaelites, because what happened to Ishmael and Hagar? They got sent out to the desert to die as well. So Joseph now is in good company because he's been sent off to probably die as well, right? And so, and to cover this up, they go and they dip his coat in what? in goat blood, right? So they can convince their father that they didn't do anything. He's really been killed by the other animals, which is ironic, because what do you think that Jacob used to get the birthright from Esau and to fool him? A goat, right? The sins of the father, right? And you know, have you ever noticed, I don't know if you've worked with very many dysfunctional families, but there's always a scapegoat. A scapegoat in every family. The one that's going to be sacrificed, because that's the one that's the problem. That was Joseph. He was the scapegoat. So when they present their coat to their father, they give another clue. They don't like him very well. They said, "We found this. Would you examine it and see whether it is your son's tunic or not?" Did they say, "Tell us if it's our brother Joseph"? No. So that tells you again, not our brother, it's your son. As if he was nothing to them. Which, guess what? He was nothing to them. Now, I'm not going to stand here and say that I don't think that Joseph maybe was a little dysfunctional, because after all, he did wear that coat to kind of lord it over his brothers, you know. He was telling his dreams to his brother about how superior he was to the other one. So I can see a teenager doing this, can't you, you know? And then, quite truthfully, in the end, when we read it, I'm not even really sure that Joseph forgives them. But that's in another sermon that's coming up. Regardless, this story tells us that problems arise from how people react, what they do with their emotions in a dysfunctional family. You know, we see anger, we see jealousy, right? Bitterness, violence, abuse, favoritism, sometimes murder. Largest percent of murders come from family members. This dysfunction, I think, in Joseph stems not from any one source, but rather from the brokenness that has occurred all the way back to Adam and Eve. In their years of brokenness, it's those sins of the father, and we should add, mother. But you know what? The sins of the father do not have to continue. There's someone else in that family that chose a different path than to continue to live in a dysfunctional family. You know who that was? It was Jesus. You see, these are Jesus's ancestors, right? The very family we talked about. They're those relatives that you don't want to talk about that are in your past. And that brokenness didn't totally stop Joseph either, did it? Even though after Jacob's family and Joseph's family is gone, we still have families that are murderers and are liars and they're prostitutes and they're rapists. And that could have been Jesus' inheritance. But Jesus chose to say, "No, I'm not going to live that way. I'm going to live differently." Jesus chose to love and to actually sacrifice himself for others. You know, and Jesus tells you that you can make a different choice as well if you're living in a dysfunctional family. If you had something that happened painful in your family years and years ago to you, don't let that experience become that focal point of your life. Let Jesus be that focal point of your life, you know? Let that be a springboard to saying, "No, this is where the dysfunction stopped." Because, you know, unless you let go of the old, the generations of the old, God can't bring anything in new. Jesus' story reminds us, while a lot of family relationships can be violent, you don't have to be violent. And Jesus' story tells us that even in the most deeply dysfunctional families, there still can be found forgiveness and mercy and compassion. So I'm going to tell you today to tear down those dysfunctional households that are in your mind, any of them in your family you can break down, and change your way of thinking. Make ties that bind, not chains that inflict pain on others in your life. You know, God doesn't impose a limitation on you, and neither should you impose that limitation on yourself as well. Make up your mind that you are going to be the one that sets that brand new standard for your family today. Make up your mind that you're going to base that standard not on what everybody else has done in your life, but what Jesus has done for you in your life. Let's take a moment and reflect on that message, and let's take those things to God that are dysfunctional in our life, and let's lay them at the foot of the cross.